Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. At least 14 people were killed and 29 injured when four suicide bombers attacked Maiduguri City in Nigeria's restive Borno State Wednesday. Two men and two women blew themselves up in the Muna neighborhood of the city that's been the home of the Boko Haram extremist insurgency. Police say the two male and two female bombers targeted crowded parts of the city. Flash floods caused by heavy rain in Greece killed at least 14 people in three rural towns west of the capital Athens on Wednesday. More heavy rainfall is expected in the towns of Mandra, Neoparamos, and Megara. They are home to many factories and warehouses on the rural outskirts of the city. Officials have compared the flooding overnight to a waterfall coming down the mountains of the West Attica region. One regional governor said the situation is very difficult. The Niagara Falls came down and could not be stopped. The floods have been described by area mayors as the worst in 20 years. One mayor said everything is lost. The disaster is biblical. The Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras has declared a national day of mourning for the flood victims. Thousands of Iranians spent a third night in the open after Saturday's massive 7.3 magnitude earthquake and hundreds of aftershocks that rocked both Iran and Iraq, killing more than 500 and injuring thousands. Residents in damaged areas have complained of a lack of tents, blankets, water, even food. President Hassan Rouhani toured the city of Kermanshah and promised the government would move swiftly to help the homeless. This is VOA News. Zimbabwe's longtime president is confined to his home, according to South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, leaving Robert Mugabe's fate uncertain after what increasingly appears to be a military-backed effort to oust him after 37 years in public. Jacob Zuma, who also chairs the Southern African Development Community, said in a statement that he spoke to Mugabe, who indicated he was being confined to his home. South Africa is also in contact with the Zimbabwean Defense Force. President Trump boasted Wednesday that America's standing in the world has never been stronger after his just-completed two-week trip to Asia.
Freedom of navigation and overflight are critical to the security and prosperity of all nations. I also met with the prime ministers of India, Australia, and Japan to discuss our shared commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific.
Trump took a swipe at his predecessors in the White House, saying they failed to protect and promote the interests of the American people. French President Emmanuel Macron has called on Europe to fill a funding void left by Washington's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. From Paris, correspondent Lisa Schlein, Alisa Bryant, that is, reports.
President Macron said European governments and the private sector must ensure funding for the main UN scientific body known as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He also called on nations to accelerate their energy transition and said France would close all its coal plants before 2022. Rich nations have imposed their universe on the world, Macron said of greenhouse emissions. It is forbidden to impose the tragedy they may create. France and Germany are leading the push to accelerate emission-cutting promises reached by world leaders in Paris 2 years ago. This latest meeting in Bonn aims to draw up the rules for executing the 2015 Climate Pact aimed at limiting global warming to under 2 degrees Celsius from 1990s levels. New findings show the world has already crossed the 1 degree mark. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said his recent visit to Caribbean islands devastated by hurricanes provided him with a glimpse of what the future could hold. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The U.S. and Japanese naval forces are to hold bilateral training exercises for 10 days. Beginning Thursday, more than 14,000 American personnel are to participate in the drills, including a number of aircraft carriers and guided missile destroyers. There's more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world, around the clock, at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The world reacts to the military developments in Zimbabwe.
I don't like coups. I think we should rely on democratic processes, but obviously everybody's gotten a little bit frustrated over there. You know, they should go forward with elections as soon as possible.
That's U.S. Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico. We'll get reaction from Zimbabwe's Central Business District on the day that the military came to town. A political analyst will look at the future of Zimbabwe, and a human rights activist reacts to the sacking of Isabel dos Santos as head of Angola's oil company, Sonango.
People are very excited. Somebody just posted something saying, we declare the 15th of November as the Independence Day of Sonango, because the nomination of Isabel was very contested.
Suzatina Kutai is an Angolan political commentator and women's rights activist. The U.S. Embassy in Liberia urges the two top vote-getters in the country's October 10 presidential election to prepare to compete in the runoff election. And there's a meeting in Mozambique this week on how drones can help in future disaster response. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Jacob Zuma said Wednesday that Zimbabwe's longtime President Robert Mugabe has been confined to his home after what increasingly appears to be a military-backed effort to oust Mr. Mugabe after 37 years in power. Social media accounts report the mood is tense in Harare, the capital, as some businesses closed early. Tanks rolled through Harare on Tuesday, a day after the head of Zimbabwe's armed forces, General Constantino Chiwenga, warned he would step in unless Mugabe stopped trying to purge the ruling ZANU-PF party of supporters of former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Kuzai Vanavasha reports for VOA on the atmosphere in Harare's central business district.
There is a little less traffic in Harare's business district, but otherwise it looks like business as usual. A few blocks away, the army has blockaded roads around government buildings in what they are calling a military takeover. Chipokandare is a vendor who trades between the central business district and her neighborhood.
This was really normal, but it was strange.
Kandare says everything was normal, but it was strangely quiet and strangely calm. People had confusion in their faces, but everything else seemed normal. Tendai Zindoga passes through the central business district on his way to work. He says that in town, everything is all right, like every other day. Shops and banks are open and people are going as usual. But Zindoga says there is heavy military presence and they had blockaded some roads, but now they have opened them.
We are still in shock and still confused.
She says people are still in shock and still confused. They don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, and we don't know the outcome of it. Zindoga, however, is optimistic and welcomes the move. Zindoga says the events are good and calls it a song that is loved by all Zimbabweans because the soldiers have been able to rid of the regime that has been there for 37 years. But he says it's a new life that has come to Zimbabwe, and we are happy about it because they are not bothering anyone. So far, there's been no public violence, and some say the military is providing a sense of reassurance. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
U.S. lawmakers welcomed the apparent oust of Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe, although not the military action that confined Mugabe to his home and could end his 37-year rule. VOA's Michael Bowman spoke with several senators and has this report from Capitol Hill.
The top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Ben Cardin of Maryland, deems Mugabe's sidelining as a desirable outcome accomplished through less than desirable means.
We obviously don't like coups, but Mugabe is certainly, it's time for the country to move on. So I hope that they will find a democratic process.
Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake has firsthand knowledge of Zimbabwe.
I lived in Zimbabwe in the 1980s. I wrote my master's thesis on Mugabe, trying to explain his hold on to power in the 1980s. Been a long time interest for me.
Flake speaks bluntly about how Mugabe will go down in history.
Long-serving thug killed the economy and in the end lost an election and couldn't take it. And so intervened and then stayed in power. So it's not a good legacy, you know. Zimbabwe, they always say, was a breadbasket of Southern Africa and became the basket case during his reign.
Another Republican, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, concurs.
He got more attached to power, more repressive in how he treated his people, rampant corruption. You know, Africa is the prize of the 21st century, I think, for the world at large. It's a beautiful continent, great people, a lot of natural resources. With better governance, the sky's the limit.
Democrat Tom Udall of New Mexico expressed hope the military action in Zimbabwe will end soon.
I don't like coups. I think we should rely on democratic processes, but obviously everybody's gotten a little bit frustrated over there. Yeah, they should go forward with elections as soon as possible.
A better future for Zimbabwe is there for the taking, according to Senator Flake.
Nobody's going to mourn the the ouster of Mugabe, certainly, but what comes next is what's important.
General elections are scheduled for July and August of next year. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
A Zimbabwean political analyst says sacked Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is monitoring the situation in his country from South Africa, where he fled after his ouster. But Shadrach Gutto, professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, says there are mixed reactions among the estimated million or so Zimbabweans who are living in South Africa to the military situation in their country.
So far, he hasn't spoken, but he's definitely here. It is said that he came to South Africa through Mozambique, and therefore he's around. But at the same time, I think that Zimbabweans who are here, probably people estimate about a million or more than that, are divided. There are those even who came because of the repression and the poverty in Zimbabwe, but they are still divided. They are loyal, some of them, to Robert Mugabe and so on. But Mugabe is on the way out. I think he's fragile. But at the same time, the military is aware that according to the protocols that we have in the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, but also the Constitutive Act of the African Union will not allow them to take over the government through unconstitutional means.
Along those lines, Professor, I read somewhere that, or I may have heard, that former Vice President Mnangagwa was planning to be returning to Zimbabwe. Do you know that? Is he preparing to go back to Zimbabwe?
Well, I don't think that under the circumstances he will go back. If he went back, he will want to regain his former position of being the vice president to Robert Mugabe. And I don't think the two can really continue to work together.
You are in South Africa, where President Jacob Zuma is the current chair of the Southern African Development Community, SADC. I was reading that President Zuma is sending or has sent a delegation to Zimbabwe and also to Angola. What do you think his message is going to be?
Well, the message is basically going to be to restate the protocols that SADC is, you know, working on. In other words, no change of government through military coup or unconstitutional means, but also to reinforce to the military in Zimbabwe that the African Union will also not tolerate that. But at the same time, they are aware that pushing out Emmerson Mnangagwa as the second in command in Zimbabwe is also serious, because they realize the army is divided on the matter.
Shedrack Guto is Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. You're speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, November 16. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Angola's new president, João Lourenço, has fired Isabel dos Santos, the daughter of former President Eduardo dos Santos, as head of the state oil company Sonago. The president appointed Carlos Santonindo to replace her. In the shakeup of the oil company's leadership, President Lourenço also replaced six other board members of the company. The former president's decision to choose his daughter as head of the state oil company attracted wide condemnation and protests from both civil society and opposition groups. Cesar Tina Kotai is an Angolan political commentator and women's rights activist. She tells viewers Peter Clotty that on all social media platforms, including Twitter and Facebook, many Angolans have hailed the president's decision to fire Isabel dos Santos.
People are very excited. Facebook, which is the main social media that people use in Angola, is overfilled with joy and excitement about this. Somebody just posted something saying, "We declare the 15th of November as the Independence Day of Sonango." People are really, really excited because the nomination of Isabel was very contested. A lot of people were angry. There was even an intention of people going in the streets to protest, which was then prohibited by police. But it has never been peacefully accepted by the majority of Angolans, that nomination.
So did the president or the government assign reasons why Isabel dos Santos was removed from her position?
No. And it's not a practice for presidents or governors or whatever, when they fire somebody, it's not a practice here to justify the decision.
Some people are saying that her firing could be seen as a move against her father, former President Eduardo dos Santos, and that this is a strike against the family, because when President João Lourenço came, he seems to be reversing everything that the former president did. What do you say to that?
I don't really agree with that line of thought, because President dos Santos and João Lourenço have a very close relationship that dates from long time ago. And João Lourenço was also used in other occasions to annihilate, in a way, some of the party's heavyweights. So I don't think that João Lourenço would affront the president. I think that it comes from the fact that Isabel is very unpopular. There's many things that started coming to the surface in terms of how she was using that position to benefit her businesses. Lots of conflicts of interest, lots of issues that indicate mismanagement of the resources in the company. So I don't think it's anything to do with the fact that he wants to confront or he wants to annihilate whatever President dos Santos did.
So how are civil society groups and opposition groups reacting to the sacking?
I haven't had any statement or any communication made by any civil society organization. There is an MP that is talking about an investigation to be conducted to see to the extent to which her management might have harmed the state and the public interest. And I totally agree with that position, because the signs that we have so far and the evidence that we have so far is that Isabel did not, while she was there, she didn't manage the company as she should, not according to the law and not according to the principles of good governance. Because she made a lot of deals that benefited herself and her companies and her other companies. In fact, when she was nominated, the conflict of interest was one of the arguments that civil society organizations and individuals have raised in disagreement with that nomination, because Isabel owns most of the businesses in the country. And some of those companies that she owns or that she has shares in, they are also partially owned by Sonangol. So there was a conflict of interest.
Sizatina Kutai is an Angolan political commentator and women's rights activist. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Angolan capital, Luanda. The U.S. Embassy in Liberia is urging the two top vote-getters in the country's October 10 presidential election to focus on competing in the runoff election if and when it is rescheduled. In a statement issued Wednesday, November 15, the embassy stressed the importance of a peaceful transfer of power to a democratically elected president in January next year, in line with Liberia's constitution. The Liberian Supreme Court this month order a state on the runoff election to allow the Elections Commission investigate claims of irregularities in the first round vote. The embassy says it has confidence in the integrity of the October elections because no credible observation group suggested that the cumulative anomalies observed reflect systemic issues sufficient to undermine the fundamental integrity of the electoral process. Akaros Gray is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives from George Weah's Congress for Democratic Change Party, the CDC.
The position of the U.S. Embassy correlates definitely with the stance of the Mali Coalition for Democratic Change that we need a smooth transition to a democratic political arrangement. And we believe that there should be a runoff election, and we are prepared to get into the runoff election.
Now, it does say that the disputes and litigation should be initiated and conducted in good faith by the claimants, meaning the four parties that have filed the complaint to the National Elections Commission. What do you know in terms of the proceedings that are taking place now with the National Elections Commission?
What we demand is that in the confines of the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia, there should be a transition from one democratic leadership to another in the month of January. So our quest is to go to the runoff election and ensure that the voices of the Liberian people are being heard. That's all we call for, and we expect the National Elections Commission to speedily adjudicate this matter so that the true voices and representation of the people can be heard, and we'll have a smooth transition of power from President Sirleaf to the next president elected by the people of the Republic of Liberia.
The statement does say that in terms of the complaints that have been filed, does say that no accredited Liberian regional or international observation group suggested that the cumulative anomalies observed reflect systemic issues sufficient to undermine the fundamental integrity of the electoral process.
Definitely, we know that it's a calculated attempt to fit a bus stop, first and foremost, using the legal proceeding of our country, and to delay a runoff election. And I think it's a calculated attempt to buy time with the hope that maybe they think that they can have an interim government. But we believe that there can be no interim government in our country on the basis of the laws. So we must go to elections. So they must speed up the process. And instead of delaying the process by the full political institution, they must stand in the interest of the Liberian people, because the people want election. And we must go to election and elect a new leadership that will replace the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf administration.
The statement does urge the CDC and the ruling Unity Party to focus on constructively engaging each other and the voters as you prepare to compete in the runoff. So is the CDC ready for the possibility of a runoff?
The CDC is 100% ready for a runoff election. And I want to encourage our friends from the ruling establishment to join us so that we can have this runoff election. And interestingly, we call on our partisans to remain calm and peaceful as we progress in this process, because the fact of the matter, we cannot plunge our country into any chaos anymore. The solution to this process is to go to election. And whosoever becomes elected by the people of the Republic of Liberia, that person becomes the next president in 2018. So, but we are optimistic that victory is certain.
Representative Gray, thank you very much. It's so nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you also. And peace to the people of the Republic of Liberia.
Akaros Gray is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives from George Weah's Congress for Democratic Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Experts from humanitarian, public, and private sectors are gathering in Mozambique this week to discuss how drones can help improve disaster response in the future. Mozambique is a particularly disaster-prone country and is highly vulnerable to cyclones and floods. The United Nations World Food Program's Emergency Coordinator for Asia and the Pacific, Haidak Baki, was one of the leaders of the workshop. Baki tells Ricky Stryak that drones cannot replace information gathering tools already in use, but that they can help speed up information gathering and improve disaster response.
Saving lives, we need information to decision makers to take a decision quickly within 24 to 72 hours. And there are some cases where it's really difficult to get, for example, satellite imageries to have a situation awareness of what's happening to prioritize the aid. So there where kind of the UAV or drones kind of play a very good complementary role here, kind of also help in bringing this information as soon as possible.
When you talk about information, specifically, let's talk about Mozambique, which is one of the most disaster-prone countries in the world. What kind of information is helpful that drones can get, let's say, before or after or during a disaster?
Before, that also can be a very good tool to have a baseline data to form the changes later on when the emergency happens, especially when the flooding, et cetera. And that's what are going to be really good, valuable information to decide later on without the change. As for the emergency response, for example, if you take the flooding as one of the cases in emergency response, then we find that the drones can bring kind of what are the area which is most kind of affected. And then we can also decide where to respond quickly and efficiently. And this goes back to the same first question you asked, but Mozambique is one of the high disaster-prone countries, and that's why it's selected out of other countries around the world.
In terms of disaster relief currently in Mozambique, are there agencies, are there government bodies using drones? How many drones are operating? What does the future look like? What do you hope improves in terms of drone usage?
There is a direction of having drones, and we see that with the disaster management authorities in country, INGC, and where they have now two, which they can use it also for disaster response. But also there are other actors in country which is using for maybe commercial use on other things. And will they have a really a good role in the future to contribute and complement the other efforts of using this technology? So far, I didn't see any disaster response with the drones, but there is a direction towards using this technology. The only thing that is missing there and how to coordinate all these deployment and bringing all these partners who already have an assets in country and in a very coordinated way to make it the best out of this technology. So we are looking at a coordinated way and use it efficiently and effectively.
That was Haida Bakira, the United Nations World Food Program's IT Emergency Coordinator for Asia and the Pacific. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Maputo. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. lawmakers welcomed the apparent ouster of Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe, although not the military action that confined Mugabe to his home and could end his 37-year rule. Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, deemed Mugabe's sidelining a desirable outcome accomplished through less than desirable means. And that's it for this Thursday, November 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat.
whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.